Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I feel like we just talked.
I know. Seems like only 2 hours ago.
Right. That's for a podcast that people can listen to next week. We pre-taped that one. Then we don't have our little tech podcast thingy midweek anymore because you've got yours and I've got mine. And so we don't have that anymore.
We have our little silos.
Yeah. That's okay.
That's fine.
Both podcasts.
I was thinking we have... We really kind of come, so like Monday, like between this, I look at the six colors list sometimes. It's like Monday, there's upgrade. Wednesday, there's clockwise. Thursday is usually when I post the rebound. Friday or Thursday night is download.
Yeah, Thursday
like,
night.
Yeah, we really kind of cover the whole whole week. We got a lot of shows.
We got it all. Yeah, I don't think I put a download link in there, but that's because I was done. I had two podcasts last night, so I download and then like I had 30 minutes to eat dinner. And then I did Incomparable. Yeah. Busy.
Yeah. Yeah. It stacks up.
Busy time. A lot going on. I just, this is in the listening to the laundry machine kind of style of this podcast, which is that I was in the shower not too long ago, like 10 minutes ago, thinking to myself, oh yeah, I'm talking to Dan at 1. I wonder what time it is. And I did that internal clock thing. I was like, I think it's like 12:45. I think I'm fine. Get out of the shower, towel off, step outside into the bedroom, look at the clock. 12:55. I'm like, all right.
Let's close.
Get this moving along, man. It was a little closer. It was just one of those funny moments of I had no information because I was just... And then my phone wasn't in the bathroom or anything like that. I couldn't stick my hand out of the shower. And you know, I had nothing. I just had to guess. And I was close. I was in the ballpark. But so, yes, I'm clean. I'm as clean as I ever get, quite frankly, right at this moment.
Yeah.
Ready for podcasting.
That's important. Podcast hygiene, super important.
We did some interesting Macworld pieces this week.
Mm-hmm.
And we should also put a shout out to our friend Susie Oakes, who is who is our editor and at Macworld both. And former colleague there, and she and a lot of other of our former IDG colleagues lost their jobs this week. So
yeah,
boo. Been there, right?
Yeah. Well, hopefully, I feel like, and we may have alluded to this on something else that we taped today, but I feel like that was a positive in many ways for both of us. It required some rejiggering. We've talked about that kind of stuff before, but I feel like we've both moved onward and upward from there. And I trust and hope that Susie and the rest of our colleagues will do the same.
Yeah, I think it's tough, but it's also an opportunity. And most, if not all, of the people that I know who left when we did have gone on to do better things. So, yeah. But it's a tough thing. I wrote about. So I was going to write about. Imagining how the Apple would introduce the Siri speaker this week. And I did a whole outline. And then, like the day before I was going to send the column in, Susie posted a story that she wrote about what she wanted in the Siri speaker if that happened at Macworld Expo. And I, or not Macworld Expo, WWDC.
Posted up, if this happened in 2009.
Sorry. Well, I was thinking about Macworld, right? Because so she was at Macworld and she posted the story. That was her last byline story, I think, on Macworld. So I was working on this before she posted it. And I thought, oh, I can't do that. So that story is on Six Colors today. And you wrote about computer appliances sort of like jumping off from the Echo and the Google Home and Siri. So we had a couple of stories in that vein this week, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think we're at an interesting inflection point right now with this. And I mean, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, the Echo and the Google Home and sort of voice assistants and the possibility of Apple doing one. And I think it's, you know, the fact that that has captured our attention and for so many people, their imagination, I think says something about the state of the technology industry these days, which is that, you know, it doesn't take, you don't have to look very hard to see that PC numbers have been declining basically for years. And they're still out there. They're still going to sell. But people have become so comfortable with technology, and technology has become something that has pervaded so much of your life that the idea of sitting down in front of a PC, you know, at least to do things other than work generally, is kind of becoming more and more alien. And as such, technology just gets integrated more closely into our lives in like different places. And I think, you know, the both the idea of a Siri speaker and of sort of this larger appliance computing idea show that technology is much, in some ways, you need a lot lighter touch in places. Rather than like a heavy piece of, you know, we used to call, you know, the like big heavy iron, right? Like computing, right? Where it's like lots of horsepower and all this. And there's still some need for that. But, you know, in the way that Steve Jobs envisioned, I think, the iPad as the car and the Mac as the truck, I think maybe the iPad's not quite the car, but I think it's part of the car solution, sort of, like between your tablet and your smartphone, even your set-top box, and then whatever this class of devices that is the you know, Echo and the Siri speaker and that kind of thing. I think, you know, sort of consumer-oriented computing is very different than it once was.
Yeah, I think, and boy, we have talked about this before, but for me, I keep coming back to that the voice interfaces need to get better in terms of being complex, or in terms of, I guess, simplifying complexity. And that's what I keep... I feel like every time we talk about this, we inch a little bit closer to this. Like, the pieces are there, but as it was... I mean, I remember this from the early days of using a personal computer when I was a kid, that, you know... You could see how it was going to come together, but it just wasn't together yet. And I feel like we're there with this stuff now. And so all these voice assistants, I keep thinking that the problem is, so smart home stuff or voice assistant stuff. Yeah, I can tell my voice assistant to turn on the front door lights. And I can program a website or an app to schedule my door lights coming on and off, right? But what I can't do for most things of any complexity is reduce a complex task to something simple, like you can when you say, "Hey lady, set a timer for 5 minutes," right? Which is the perfect example of, on your phone, to set a timer for 5 minutes, you have to unlock it, hit the home button, find the clock app, open the clock app, switch to the timer tab, move your finger on the little dial till you get it to the right number of minutes, and press start, right? Or you can say, "Hey lady, set a timer for 5 minutes."
Right. And that not only just reduced the number of steps it took, but it also, like, sort of the side effect there is you use it much more, right? Like, before that was an option, like, I would set the stove timer a bunch on the stove because I could, like, it was way faster.
Right.
Beep, but boop, 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 setting it with the Echo now is so super, much faster.
Super fast.
And it, like, you know, buzzes my watch when it's done. So, you know,
so,
like,
it's got light, very light complexity. It's not very complex. And yet, because it's connected to all these other devices, it all kind of comes together. And the problem I see with a lot of this stuff is that the voice assistants, which are supposed to make things easier, like, again, "Hey lady, turn off the front light," is not really much different than flipping the light switch. I mean, I know that there's more complexity than can be embedded in there, but it's not that much more. What's missing is this other piece, which is me saying, "Hey lady, turn on the front light 20 minutes before sunrise and turn it off at sunrise," and have it go, "Got it," and be done. Instead, it's like, no, go to IFT, make a rule that says set it at this time, and make another rule that says set it at sunrise, and do these things, and then save those out. It's like, I can do that now. It's in the same world as my voice assistant, but they can't do that yet. And it's that stuff. It's complex tasks being simpler. Now, it's like, isn't it great that you can talk to this thing? It's like, yeah, but beyond the super simple, it's not making my job easier, my life easier. And that's the hump that all of these assistants have to get over, is complexity. And it's hard, right? I mean, that's going to be a really hard thing to do. But imagine not having to set, because nerds like us can do a bunch of IFT triggers and think it's super awesome. And I do have that. I have my lights come on at sunset and go off at like 11 o'clock. And then they come on at an early time in the morning and go off at sunrise. And it's awesome. But that's 4 IFT triggers, right? A regular person's not going to do that, but or you could use an app to do it. Like some of the smart lighting apps have that, and HomeKit has that. But the right answer is, don't have rules in mind in this way, and don't create new objects using a service. It's literally just saying, here's what I want to do. And the assistant goes, I can do that for you. It's done. That's it. End.
Right. Well, I mean, and the trick there is, you know, something like that might be a task that you don't end up you probably don't do that or change that very often, right? Like, it's not specifically making a lot of these things or making a lot of these determinations may not be tasks that we do every day, like asking for the temperature outside or setting a timer, but it requires a much broader set of capabilities on the part of it and on the part of the intelligence. And we've seen, you know, obviously all these companies, including Apple, snapping up AI and machine learning and deep, you know, dark data and all this stuff. This is what they're going for. Everybody wants to have that first assistant that is really able to understand like what you're asking of it and sort of field things beyond just like a very static parameter of like ask this for this thing in this way, right? Like, and it's gotten better, but it's not
still command
you're totally
line.
Right. That is a jump. That is like a quantum jump there, or exponential jump, right. You know? And
I had somebody on Twitter say, I don't want to interactive with the voice assistant. I just want to be able to tell it what to do and have it do it. It's like, well, I get what you're saying in terms of wanting simplicity, but right now, if you have to do that, it is a command line interface. You literally have to embed everything in it, and if you fail, then it fails. And what I want is, like, I don't know the parameters, so I want to ask, mm-hmm. like, can you do this? And have it say, okay, I need to know this, and for me to tell it, and then it'd be like, yeah, then now I can do it, and that we're just not there. Not happening. Yeah.
I think the interesting sort of side note of this is the, you know, looking at Google at Google I/O this week, and they talked about rolling out the Google Assistant to a bunch more places.
Right.
And one of the examples they gave was as an app on iOS. And what's interesting about that to me is that they made a point in there about how you can type to the Google Assistant. And it's not entirely wrong-headed. There are times where that makes sense. But for so many cases, that seems like the wrong direction to me, just because there are things. For some tasks, it might end up being beneficial, but for a lot of tasks, it's faster to just do it rather than type a query in English, right? Like, if I go to a Google search, you know, I can just type a couple words, whereas I don't want to go to the Google Assistant and have to, like, kind of pretend that I'm talking to a person and formulate a sentence in a way like I'm talking to a person, because it's not a person, and that doesn't make it any faster for me. That is now requiring me to type a bunch of stuff instead of go do the thing I was just going to do. So
unless it's a complicated thing that it can do very easily, but that's
right. And we haven't seen that yet, like whether that is a thing that it can do or not. So I don't know how that works. And then of course there's also the challenge of, as people pointed out, on iOS especially, where it's not a thing that's baked into the OS, is that kind of a non-starter if it's a separate app that you have to go use?
Yeah.
So, but I mean, there's a reason everybody's interested in this, and it's because I think it is one of the most interesting areas of computing right now. You know, the for better or worse, the PC and even the tablet and the smartphone all kind of feel like solved problems. And say you can't improve on them. You clearly can, but you know, there aren't big jumps happening there.
No. And this is a thing that I would say it's like, it's an extension of the computer for the rest of us philosophy that Apple has had all along, which is hide complexity so that regular people don't feel like they have to learn something, because a lot of them are not, but can take advantage of the power. You know, the Mac hid complexity because it didn't have a command line. The iPhone and the iPad hide complexity because you're interacting directly on the screen with these friendly apps, and they're doing what, you know, what you want to do. But there's still complexity there, but they try to hide a lot of it. And the voice interface potentially hides a lot of complexity behind the scenes. And it has I'd say in our time, the greatest possibility of providing a benefit, if it can be done right, to give power to people who are never going to be techie people, to be power users, to program something, right? It will give them power, because now all they have to do, if it's done right, like, is explain what they want. And we all know how, I mean, again, people have communications issues too, right? But we all know how to explain things verbally. Like, I just want this, right? And if you're having a conversation, then an intelligent agent on the other side can also ask those questions of like, what do you mean by that? Is this what you want? And if it's really smart, then it does all of the stuff that would be the, you know, 50 different button presses or whatever in a web app somewhere to make this thing happen. It's all gone, because all you know, you're not programming anything. You're just having a conversation saying, this is what I would want. And the thing is smart enough to know how to get that for you. And that is the potential there is so enormous. Not that it will necessarily be realized anytime soon, but that seems to be what all of these assistants are striving for. And I get why. Like, I totally get why they're doing it. I would say, actually, I think it's a greater likelihood that the, that these will work than that we will have completely, like, everyone will have a self-driving car everywhere. I feel like these are probably more likely than that.
I mean, they're connected, too. I mean, it's some of it. Like, some of those technologies are very similar in terms of, like, learning.
Machine learning, AI.
Yeah, machine learning stuff.
This is the whole theme of Google I.O. is that. So.
This is far less critical than a self-driving car, right? Like, you can get stuff wrong with this, and it's probably not going to, you know, kill anybody.
But this leads you down a route of, like, having people being able to have these conversations, and then the technology is smart enough to do what they want them to do. And they're working at our command, but they're able to figure out all the details. And it's, like, essentially scripting or programming for you, because you're not going to do it. You know, we all have scripts. We all have programs. When we bought this electric car, Lauren and I were laughing because all our how to drive a car scripts are broken. Like, it's keyless, which we've never had before. And I know it's not just electric cars that have that, but it's keyless. So you get in and you're like, where do I put the keys? And you realize I don't need to get my keys out when I get in this car. If I have my keys with me, I can unlock the car and get in and start the car and drive. It's like, whoa. But right, because it turns out, yeah, and that moment it's exposed, you have a script of things you do when you leave the house and get into the car. And that's been blown off. Like, we all have those. So the idea, it's not unusual to be able to express those and say, here's what I want to have happen in the morning, have an assistant answer you.
Yeah. I mean, and even for simple things, it's retraining, right? Like you said about lights, you know, I have a bunch of lights set up and I can, you know, turn them on and off with the Echo or whatever, but you know,
with the home automation stuff, like building a scene they talk about, right? And you get an app and you can build a scene where it's like, when I trigger this, what I want to do is I want the lights to dim. And then the separate thing, I want you to turn on the TV and set it to this input, right? It's like, you can do that. Okay, you and I could both do that with the stuff we've got. You can set a scene, right? But what you really want for most people is to say, hey lady, when I watch TV, I want you to dim the lights if it's after 7 p.m. or if it's dark, right? If it's okay, got it.
Let me back up to something way simpler that it can't do. hey, lady, dim the lights and turn on my television.
Oh, yeah, right.
Can't handle that. That's like, if you can't handle a conjunction, then we're never doomed. Mind yeah. your ideas of, like, these massive programming chains. We can't even handle, like, add bananas and milk to my shopping list.
Gotta walk. Yeah. Now I've got, so what am I buying? Oh, bananas and milk. With one line, check.
Yep.
I only have bananas. No.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, you're totally right. I mean, like, we've come a long way in natural language processing. Certainly anybody, you know, 20, 30 years ago, looking at this, probably would be pretty surprised. Though you know, there was a fair amount of technology of similar stuff at the time, but, you know.
Well, and we both like our Echoes, right? And they're fun for what they are, but what they are is super rudimentary.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I've said it before. It's like talking to your dog, right? Like, your dog can understand limited commands,
And when you get something, when you know what the commands are and you use them, it can be magical, but it needs to be way better, and it can be way better, and I think it will be way better eventually.
I want you to go into my room, open the drawer next to my bed, and get the fin.
Yeah, that's right. Is that a toe? Spoilers for a movie that's in release now.
Should we talk about the... Well, I don't know.
No, what do you want to talk about?
I was going to say, do you want to talk about Mr. Vitici's iOS iPad wish list?
That was on my list of possible things to talk about. Yeah, Federico did his thing like he did last time, where there's a concept video and an article about his sort of iOS 11 wish list, which is weirdly timed to me because...
It's a little early.
It's so close. Well, it's so close to WWDC, though, that any decisions about what's in iOS 11 have already been made.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's not going to influence,
right?
Probably.
I feel like if he had done it before, it might have potentially been influential. But now it's just more like placing your bets, like me doing the fan fiction about the Siri speaker launch. It's like,
sometimes I wonder, and this is maybe a little inside baseball, but like sometimes I wonder if there are things that, you know, people know and they make stories that
I
are
do
kind
wonder
of
that.
Tips of the hat to like, yeah, I'm going to look really smart when the iOS announcement comes out.
I do wonder that. That's happened to me very rarely.
I've been there too, yeah.
Every now and then I get a tip that something's coming and I'll be like, oh, wouldn't it be great if this has come? This is coming? That would be cool. And then it's like, yeah, that was totally, I knew that was
happening. I will say the concept video is excellent.
It's great.
I felt like it's really well thought through.
Uh-huh. That's Federico for you, right? Like, it's not...
Oh, yeah.
So many of
yeah.
the concept videos are...
Half-baked.
Unreasonable, right? They're imaginary. They just, how would that work? And they haven't really thought them through. And Federico, I was actually really frustrated because there was an analyst on Twitter today and retweeted by another analyst. And I was kind of frustrated with both of them. And their premise was basically like, this concept video is dumb because it's trying to make the iPad work like the Mac. And the iPad needs to be productive, but it needs to not regress and look like the Mac. And it's like, I don't agree with that at all. I think Federico knows the iPad in and out. And what that concept video shows is fundamentally iPad-like in what it's doing. It is not trying to replicate the Mac on the iPad at all.
It borrows some elements from the Mac OS. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized it's like, well, those are really smart things, right? Like, in the same way that it'd be like arguing that there should be no copy and paste on the iPad because it's on the Mac. It's like, no, we need that. Like, that's a thing.
Yeah,
that
so drag
turned
and
out
drop.
To be a... Yeah, drag and drop, I think, is brilliant because it makes perfect... What he's describing to me makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And it is intuitive. It is on the model that people are kind of used to doing that thing. But it's also not something that is... it's not something that's even required, right? Like, you could get along mostly without using it, but it's super handy if you know it's there. And I thought about that I commented as I linked to this on Six Colors with the three fingers to expose the shelf area.
Right.
And just like between that and drag and drop discoverability, I was like, oh man, is this a discoverability problem? But then I was like, you know what? 3D touch on the iPhone is not discoverable at all. It is not a useful feature. And frankly, it's just, if you're going to ship that, you can ship this.
How discoverable are the control center and split view gestures, right? They're just like accidentally swiping from the bottom of the or notification center from the top or
what's
or
that thing? Maybe I should check that out.
You know, you could get to it accidentally, but I like the dock thing because the idea of the shelf because the idea there is that you can put things in it. You drag things. You can actually drag things like up to the top and it like pops down and you drop them there. That struck me as being the least likely thing for Apple to actually add. But I like the idea of a place that you could stash stuff, information for later. It's like multitasking for data instead of for apps.
It's kind of like your desktop, right? Like he sort of says, like, you know, it's just like, oh, what do I do with this file? I'm not really sure right now. Let me just put it up there.
And it lets move between apps in full screen and still store data to hand between them. So it's an extension of drag and drop in that way. But I like the demo video a lot. I like his idea for improving the app switcher. We clearly need an improvement of the app switcher. I thought that was that's a nice idea. Seeing a very pretty, well done example of how drag and drop will look is good. I have a hard time. I would be shocked if you can't drag and drop between iPad apps in iOS 11 because that's that they haven't changed the app switcher for multitasking.
That would be left on the table would just be tremendously awful because at that point, you know, you're basically solidifying that there's nothing new coming for the iPad for another year.
Yeah,
I think you're going to have with the iPad sales as bad as they are as already, like people are going to be pissed off.
Federico's right too about Apple Mail is a really good example of an app that time forgot where it kind of hasn't been updated a lot on iOS and it's missing a lot of features from the desktop that it probably could have in some form that I like him saying that and more sharing features and notes. And I think the thing that set off the people who are complaining that it's too much like a Mac is that he's proposing an app called Finder. But, you know, honestly, you don't even need to call it that. And it doesn't even necessarily need to be an app. But what he's saying is a universal view that allows you to see storage. And the storage is all of the different things that already exist for storage in terms of the services that you sync with. So if you add Dropbox in there, you add OneDrive or Google Drive, and you've got iCloud Drive, of course, as a built-in thing. Like the file picking thing, iCloud Drive has already basically opened the door to a file system on iOS. Yep. It's already there. It's there today. So at that point, and there's an iCloud Drive app, right? So at that point, at some point, why not just call that Files or Finder and put all of your storage in there, have it accessible from any app as well as from a standalone app. And that's a great thing. So they demoed it and it doesn't look scary or Mac-like when you view it in the kind of normal iOS context. So I thought it was good to show that.
It's interesting because seeing that and thinking about, you know, you've commented in the past that is you can't really load, say you've got like, you know, audio file on a portable recorder, you know, getting that onto an iPad is basically you know.
Yeah, how do you plug in any USB? How do you plug USB storage into an iOS device? And the answer is you can't unless you're importing photos or videos from a camera.
Right, and you can physically. There are options for doing that, but it's not. It's the OS will not let you do it because there's it can't.
Right.
It can't grab anything. It's not a photo. And so I have to assume that part of Apple's worry about this still is like if it made that possible, would people be loading stuff onto the iPad that they shouldn't, or, you know, would it be a security risk, I guess, is the question.
I don't even think that that's it. I think it's just that they haven't gotten to it yet. Because once you've got this, you can drag anything into iCloud Drive and it'll sync onto the iPad. True. And then what True. Will it do yeah. with it? And the answer is only really what apps can do with it. And so why not make that available? And if you do that, by the way, and allow USB storage to be attached to iOS devices and browsed and copied and stuff like that, you could also do the reverse, which is instead of going through iTunes, just let people plug their iPhones or their iPads into their computers and have it just show up as a disk that shows that same area and right. drag your files in if you want to do that. Why not let people do that? Like I have to copy big files to my iPad every now and then. I realize that's not a super mainstream thing, but it's an iPad Pro. Should be able to do that. Should be able to copy big files on there, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, and maybe they'll do it. Maybe they'll do it.
They got to do something. I think is the short answer. I mean, at this point, iOS 10 had pretty much nothing for iPad users, and it's been 2 years.
It's time.
They need something.
It's time. And there are rumors that maybe the new iPad Pro will be announced as well at this event, and that would be
MacBook updates and a bunch of other stuff.
I'm not sure the MacBook updates will get announced, or if they do get announced. I mean, Mike and I will, I guess, have to do our draft pretty soon. But I think that's more likely that they will do speed bumps of those, and they may announce them that day. But it's going to be like mentioned in an aside, like in the Mac section, where it's like, oh yeah, and we've got new models today that are faster and better. Applause, move on, right? Like, I don't think they're going to roll out speed bumps, right? They're just going to drop those there. But a brand new iPad with that new higher resolution screen would be something they'd roll out. And that would need to be part of a larger story, I would imagine, about the iPad Pro and the Pro features in iOS 11. Like, you'd want to build on that product with your iOS 11 story. So hopefully we'll get that. But I don't know. And maybe we'll get the Siri speaker. Who knows? It was fun to pretend... When I wrote that, it was fun to pretend that these guys were announcing that.
You did a nice job with it. And while I was reading it at a couple of points, I was trying to put the words in my head into their voices, like Tim and Phil. And I was like, yeah, I can definitely hear them saying these things.
I've been to so many of those events, Dan, right?
We both have internalized it, I think,
put in
a lot of
amazing, and there are these things that we have. And it was fun. It was funny to write that because you got to know like how Apple describes things in certain ways, and they put certain things forward. And it's like, HomeKit is great. It's the best thing ever. Like, I don't really feel that way. I think there are issues with HomeKit, but it's like, that's HomeKit. I think I had Phil Schiller say, HomeKit is exploding. People are finding out how amazing it is to make. It's like, this is what Apple says. It's the best thing ever. And then at the end, I think the punchline for me is it'll be $349, which is you know how I got that price. I thought, what do I think this product should be? And I thought $299, and I thought then now I will raise it because it's Apple and it will never be the price I think it should be. Oh, $349, we'll say that because then people will be like, ouch, $349. It's like, yeah, well, that's how it works. That's how it works.
I think I came away from that very much as I might come away from a similar announcement from Apple, which is feeling like a little underwhelmed by it. Like, because of the description of what it does, like, okay, it's a Google Home.
What I couldn't put in there was, because it would break the premise, is insert one cool feature that we haven't expected and that we haven't seen elsewhere that'll make everybody go, oh wow. And I don't know what that feature is.
I couldn't figure out
because I'm not an Apple product designer. I couldn't figure out what that wild feature is that you totally didn't expect.
That's going to be the thing that's going to get
me. It's got to
If it was just that, like, oh, it plays music and it does this, and it's like, well, I already got multiple devices that do that.
In my original draft of this, I had it popping things up on the Apple TV, like answers mm-hmm. to questions or playing something on the Apple TV and having it do that. And then after the Google stuff this week, yeah. where they showed that on the Google Assistant and with the Google Home, I thought, I'm not going to, it's going to seem too Me Too-ish now. But I had thought of that a few weeks ago when I was thinking about this story, that that would be a nice integration. I would love for it to be able to turn on my TV and show me something. If I say, hey, lady, show me my photos from my trip to Seattle, to have it be like, okay. And again, smart assistant, turn on the TV, switch to the Apple TV input, and start playing those photos. But right. I didn't put that in there. I did put in, however, a promise for a feature that's not going to be delivered right away because it's too hard for Apple to deliver, which is detecting multiple voices able to look at your personal. Also, I soft played the when they talk about like your calendars and reminders. I think when you go into the briefing room of my imaginary event afterward and ask them, they're going to tell you that only works with iCloud and it doesn't work with any third party calendars or reminders or anything like that. But they soft pedaled it in the story because they don't want to talk about its limitations.
I will say that I after that Google I/O presentation, I did order a Chromecast because I used to have one and it got left in a TV in a hotel. And it was one of the first gen ones.
It may still be there.
It's probably still there if I can get the same room. So I bought a new one just because of the features. Since I already got a Google Home, it seemed like a good investment to check that out.
Interesting. I mean, I have a Fire TV stick. I got a new Fire TV stick, and mostly because I kind of want to see what the state of the art is. I'm just kind of intrigued by that. So that's why I've got it. So I might get a Chromecast at some point. We'll see. I don't know. I have that many HDMI inputs. I don't know. Maybe there'll be a Siri speaker. I whatever it might be. I think it's a product Apple should probably be making. So I guess it'll be there. Hey, my other piece before we go, the piece I wrote for Macworld was about Apple Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just Stephen Levy's piece. If you haven't read it in Wired this week, it's really good behind the scenes look at what's going on with the new Apple campus and what they did to build it. And you can read into it what you want to read into it. I think it would be fair, although not necessarily true, but it's possible to look at some of the stories that Levy tells and think one of the reasons for Apple's somewhat sluggish approach to product development in the last few years has been that their most important and talented minds have been focused on designing every aspect of their building.
Mm.
Like, because they are, I mean, like, seriously, Apple's designers are designing new pizza boxes for the cafeteria and handles for the doors and new toilets for the bathrooms and things like that. And it's just like they may have lost some energy while they were designing their new quarters. So, but it's still really interesting. And the way they frame it is Steve Jobs's last product launch. I think they seem to feel like the people at Apple seem to feel like that's what they're doing, is they're bringing Steve's last product to fruition. And my point in the Macworld article was basically to say, it feels like that in the way that it has a point of view, like every great Apple product does. It has a point of view and it'll bug some people and it'll turn some people off because they'll make decisions. Like the MacBook is a great example, right? Where it's like the MacBook is a really cool product, but some people are infuriated by it because it's only got one port, because it's the processor isn't as powerful. There are all sorts of reasons why people are mad about it. But I think the greatest Apple products are like that, because they're like, we don't think that's important. We think it's more important that it's thin and light than that it have a fan and a more powerful processor and more ports. So take it or leave it. And that is a very Apple kind of attitude. And this Apple Park feels like it's that for writ large, which is like they made their decisions. And people, like the one that I got a lot of flack about on Twitter, is me saying like, I question their decision to build an enormous office building in a city that has no public transportation infrastructure to speak of, when some other tech companies are building in urban centers that are served by good transit options, because that allows their employees to work and live in different places based on what they want out of their lives, and without having to have the only option be to drive a car, or I guess get on a private bus. And you know what? My point is, I can't actually picture Apple in a city center, because Steve Jobs is a product of the Valley, a product of that suburban environment, and the product that he's generating is based in that context, because it really is. It is Steve Jobs's vision for what an Apple complex should look like for the 21st century. And who's going to, it's hard to deny them the privilege and the ability to build that last Steve Jobs vision.
Yeah, the question that I saw crop up, there's a Quartz article about it, is that they have their giant gym but no childcare.
Oh, yeah. They're not alone in that. There are a bunch of tech companies that don't have childcare. Google has childcare, Microsoft doesn't.
Yeah.
On site. And it's, I can see, so my question is, I feel like
who's not a parent, I don't have like as much knowledge of maybe like if there are other opportunities or they provide other things to compensate for that, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I think there's a bunch of stuff going on there. I think the simplistic argument is, oh, look at these guys, they don't have any childcare, they're stupid, but they have a gym. It's like, okay, let's break down why they don't think childcare is important, because I think childcare is important. I'm not entirely convinced that having on-site at your workplace childcare is always the best in all situations. There are situations with new mothers with very little babies, people with very little babies, where they have to breastfeed them and they need them nearby, and then having a daycare facility on-site is very valuable. And the fact that they don't offer it is really kind of crappy. So there's a scenario where it makes sense. There are other scenarios when kids are older that what you have to deal with is the edge cases. You have to deal with after school and things like that, where they're not going to be by the campus, so it's not going to matter. But for little kids, I mean, I think it's a great point that if you're a young mother, a mother of a young child at Apple, Apple's kind of making it hard for you to go back to work, which in turn, you could argue, makes it harder for a woman to decide that they're going to have a baby while they're working at Apple. And that is
or harder to take a job at Apple if they already have a young child.
If they have a young child or if they're planning to have a family, right? And you know what? That's not cool, right? Apple has the ability to make that a smooth transition for them when they come back to work. But in a lot of cases, unless they're, I mean, like Google's aren't on campus. I think that they're off campus, but they're right next door and they are set up by Google. So they're around. And that, I do think that's a flaw in this scheme, but I would kind of like to hear what Apple's argument is about it, because it may be that there's more to this story, that there is a childcare reimbursement that is part of your employee benefits, and there are childcare centers all over near the campus. But again, it's not the same if you're a breastfeeding mother, especially. It is not the same as having your baby being taken care of a place that you can walk to during the day.
And I don't love that it's positioned against the gym, because I also don't think it's a zero-sum game in that way, right? Oh, like you should be able to have a gym and 50, a childcare center.
It's 50 acres. It's 50 acres, right? And a gym is not a fundamentally male thing, because a lot of them were making it like dudes working out versus mothers. And it's like, that's not it. But the gym is about an understood of way of like keeping your people on campus as long as you can.
Yeah.
And I guess kids is an argument against that, but I could also argue that having little kids on the campus means you don't feel pulled to go get them and do the things you need to do to take care of them. If they're right there, you can just walk over to the childcare center and see them and then go back to your job. So I don't know. It's, again, there's probably some complexity to the story that the internet outrage machine is not getting. But I do think it's a fair question of like, what are your corporate priorities for your employees who are mothers or going to be mothers? And I mean, other parents too, but I think the breastfeeding example is a really great example where we breastfed both of our kids, and it's a challenge because you need to keep them close. And Lauren wasn't working outside the home at that point, so it was okay. But we've worked with IDG had a room designated for it. And even if the baby isn't there, you know, you have to make available a place for pumping and things like that to capture the milk so you can feed it to them later. But how awesome would it be to be able to go back to work as a new mom and know that instead of having your baby at some place like somewhere, that your baby was, you know, a few hundred steps away. That would be a kind of an amazing thing to do for the mothers in your company. So it's too bad, but again, I suspect there's a rationale behind it, and it wasn't like they forgot that there might need to be childcare.
Sure. Yeah. I someone should ask them directly. How about that? Maybe us. We'll see.
Because I'm sure they've got a childcare benefit, but yeah, it is a question about why they didn't do that. And it could be a Google answer. The answer could literally be, actually, we're setting up a childcare facility, it's across the street. Probably not, but it could be. It totally could be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, me neither. That's a good question, though.
All right. Well, so next week your book comes out.
That's right.
We'll do a, for, I mean, I have it already, but.
secrets.
We will do a, you'll be getting, the ebooks will ship on Tuesday, and we'll do a special podcast that will be over in the Incomparable for people who want to know more about it. That we already recorded earlier today. Yeah. See, bringing it back around to the beginning of this episode.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Well, I am looking forward to your big week next week. I think that'll
be
awesome.
Oh, thank you. Me too. I'm sure I have some other stuff to do.
Yeah, probably. Big week.
Probably.
Well, thanks to everybody out there for being a Six Color subscriber. We really appreciate it. You help us do our jobs, basically, and write things about and talk about this stuff. So thank you so much for helping us out. And we'll talk to you next time. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.